This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Prepare to be shocked, my friends. Prepare to be shocked. Did you know that America was never intended to be a democracy? You heard that correctly. It was never intended to be a pure democracy. Notwithstanding the fact that our politicians like to increasingly tell us our democracy, our democracy, our democracy, we were not given a democracy, and there were good reasons for it. When Benjamin Franklin was accosted by a woman after the Constitutional Convention, she asked him, "Sir, what kind of government have you given us?" And he said, "A republic, ma'am, if you can keep it." Well, if is a big word, if. In fact, it's the biggest little word in the Bible itself, if. And so today on Viewpoint, we're going to be talking about this big little word, if, and how it relates to our current situation in the land of the free, increasingly becoming only the home of the brave. You may recall a situation back in the days when George Washington had miraculously, through the help of God, won the battle against the world's greatest superpower, Britain. And the colonists wanted to make him king. Now, here they had been fighting against a monarchy, and now they wanted to make George Washington king. But then a cry arose among the colonists. We have no king but Jesus. We have no king but Jesus. But just in the last week, one of the premier candidates for the presidency of the United States basically said, we'll have no king. We'll have no Jesus as king. In fact, she said, when someone rose up in the midst of a rally and said, Jesus is Lord or Jesus is King, she said, you're not welcome here in this rally. You should go down the street to the other guy. Remember that? Does that have anything to do with the future of America? Does it have anything to do with the whole issue of democracy and why our founders may have not seen democracy as a favorable thing? So in today's era, politicians are talking about the sacredness of democracy and how giving more voting power to the people is a good thing to be advanced. However, I want you to hear a few things before our guest joins us here today. On December 17th in 1814, the U.S. President John Adams wrote a letter to John Taylor. Here's what he said. Remember, democracy never lasts long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. It is vain to say that democracy is less vain, less proud, less selfish, less ambitious, or less avarice than aristocracy or monarchy. The father of the Constitution, James Madison, made a similar statement. Listen carefully. He said, democracy is the most vile form of government. Democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been found incompatible with the personal security or the rights of property, and have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. How are we to understand this? Well, it appears they thought that a pure democracy and authority and monarchy are mirror images of each other, subject to the same whims of human nature, and as such make for fundamentally flawed approaches to government. So in a pure democracy, giving power to the people without restraint is the ultimate goal, and while this idea may seem good in practice, it rests on one fundamental assumption that is at odds with a biblical worldview, and that is mankind is not essentially good, mankind is essentially sinful. Welcome to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. It's Conversation with Ever-Increasing Conviction. Today, we have a very special guest for the first time joining us. He says the modern United States is a nation full of censorship, lockdowns, riots, and political persecution. How did the land of the free, supposedly under democracy, become a surveillance state terrified by COVID and ruled by unaccountable bureaucrats? So he's written a book, The Total State, which explores the erosion of individual liberties in the name of public health and a new brand of American authoritarianism coming on the wings of democracy. Orrin McIntyre joining us here today from South Florida. Orrin, it's good to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
We are living in some astounding times. There's no question about it. And you indeed have, well, Molly Hemingway says you've single-handedly changed the way American conservatives think. Well, to some extent, that may be true. But people are still crying, our democracy, what say you?
Yeah, as you listed there, the founders were not huge fans of democracy. They understood that a mixed constitution featuring input from the people, but also having other significant and important social forces was critical to maintain the type of liberty that we take for granted in the United States. And as we've gotten farther and farther away from that, we have centered democracy as the only thing that is valid in our political process. We've actually seen that our liberty is decreasing and not increasing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In fact, it was the same John Adams who said, our government was made for a moral and Christian people and is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. In other words, there was a presumption based upon the view of the founders that Americans, that humankind was essentially sinful and had all of the attributes of sinfulness that could not be controlled, and therefore a pure democracy would be totally destructive, and therefore it needed to be curtailed as a republic. So what is a republic then?
Republic is usually defined by a limited franchise. It is often a collection, either there is a popular sovereignty element to a republic, but mm-hmm. it is usually understood that there's a limitation to who will be voting, how they will qualify, and what can be done in the name of the people inside of a republic. So it does have the input of the people, but it's specifically bounded by a class generally of people who are educated, property owning, and directly tied to the tradition and history of the nation.
So we call those representatives, don't we? Congress, the Senate, the State House of Representatives, and even the Supreme Court. These are the three balancing acts of the government together with the executive branch, the President of the United States. So neither one of them is given absolute power, are they?
No, and I think it's important to understand that also Baron de Montesquieu, who was the political theorist that Madison was drawing from most when he crafted the Constitution, understood that the branches of government were not magical in and of themselves. It's not that three is some number that fixes the tyranny of government.
Right.
The reason the branches matter is that they represent different social forces. And so while the representatives of the House were there to represent the popular opinion, the other branches were bringing different social forces in that were supposed to balance and provide perspective to that. But we've eroded all of those, and that's why now feel like we're under a tyrannical government.
All right, so that's why we need to focus on what happened here, whatever happened here, and what can we do about it, if anything. We'll be right back, friends. The book, Total State. We'll be right back.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination. So what happened in just one generation? Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Again, I welcome you to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint does determine destiny. There's no question about it. There are no neutral viewpoints, yours, mine, or anyone else's. No neutral viewpoints. Every viewpoint, in some way or another, is determining destiny. It's setting a trajectory. It's setting a course. And our guest today, Orrin McIntyre, with his book, Total State, How Liberal Democracies Become Tyrannies. Now, that's what's shocking to the normal sense of Americans, thinking that somehow democracy itself is sacred, where our founders thought just the opposite. They felt that democracy, pure democracy itself, refused to recognize the sacred, and that is the sacred viewpoint that humankind are essentially sinners. And that's why they needed a savior. And so today on Viewpoint, our guest, not speaking concerning Christian aspects, but concerning the political aspects, and looking at this from that viewpoint, is basically saying liberal democracies become tyrannies. But we need to understand how and why that might be. So, Oren, give us an opening statement in that regard, will you?
Sure. The thing we need to understand about this idea of ever-increasing popular sovereignty is, as you say, people are ultimately flawed, and the mob is dangerous. And again, we know the founders understood this. You read out the many quotes underlying this point, and that's why it's important to have what Aristotle called a mixed constitution, one that allows for the best aspects of the rule of the one, the many, and the few, the three designations that he placed in the original politics. Mm-hmm. And so you have this represented in our branches of government. We have the one, the executive, we have the many, the Congress, the legislative, and then we have the few, the judiciary. And this allows us to garner the different aspects and strengths of those different viewpoints without locking us into one particular weakness of government. But when we embrace democracy as the best, the overriding system, and we start moving more and more of the authority into this idea of democracy, weakening the other understandings, then what we do is open ourselves up to the very weaknesses, the very liabilities that are represented in mass democracy. And this only becomes worse, especially in our age of mass communication, where it becomes very easy to propagandize and activate the mob on a moment's notice. And so our technology and our communications ability has only exacerbated the worst parts of democracy, that which has really brought us to a fever pitch in moments where the political class decides that they want to push down an unstable message onto the masses.
The surviving spouse of the famous Steve Jobs, who gave us, the iPhone? In any event, she came out just this week, a multi-billionaire, and said, I purchased the Atlantic magazine, which is a far-left magazine, for the purpose of governing the speech and what can be said, because we need to govern the speech in America so that we have a constant narrative coming from the left. That's what she said. The same thing that Hillary Clinton said. So how can they be screaming democracy, democracy, when in fact they're violating the essential principles of democracy, at least a republic?
Well, because ultimately this is what democracy becomes. You know, one of the failures that we've kind of had to understand is that while in the American, you know, one of the slogans we like to throw around is that the people rule, the people are in charge, popular sovereignty.
Right.
But in reality, as you've pointed out with the representative system, it's never really the people in charge, that we don't have a direct democracy in that sense.
It was popular sovereignty that crucified Jesus.
Right, yes.
The religious leaders stirred up the mob, and the mob listened to the leaders stirring them up with their propaganda, and they chose Barabbas, a thief and a murderer, over Jesus Christ.
Precisely, which is why you don't want to have the situation where it is simply a pure democracy, because the mob can always be let, it can always be manipulated. Mm. And any government that wants to stay in power, any ruling elite that want to maintain their control, ultimately recognize that if the system is democracy, then the best way to stay in power is to manipulate the beliefs of the public, and especially through the information they receive, which is why all of our ruling elites right now are obsessed with controlling social media platforms and media publications and educational institutions, because they know that that is where power really lies. It's nice to win elections, but if you can control the generational understanding of truth, then you will win all the elections by default, What's really important is controlling that information and manipulating public opinion to drive the mob towards a particular outcome.
All right, so there's no particular interest then in truth or what's best for the nation. It's what's best for me.
Especially when
or my group.
Right. You know, when you create a ruling class that is not subject, is not tied to the well-being of the people. The point of the representative is quite literally that they represent you, that they are from your area. They understand the concerns of the people in that area. They are grounded in the life that those people live day to day. And then when they represent you, they are bringing those concerns to the body politic. But instead, what we have done is created an insular class. The incumbency rate in Congress is like 95%. Everyone says they hate Congress. Its popularity ratings are in the single digits, but its incumbency rating is over 90%.
Isn't that interesting?
Democracy, you think you would have some more turnover there?
Yeah. Okay. So I want to make your book available to people, and then I want you to answer the question as simply as you can. What do you mean by total state? Friends, the book is a fascinating book, and I urge you to get a copy of it. It's a hardbound book, Total State, How Liberal Democracies Become Tyrannies. And believe it or not, it is a $33 book, and it's yours for $26 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org, you can go there. Give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling, and we'll get it into your hands. Buck Sexton, a co-host out there of the Buck Sexton Show and so on, says, the total state is a brutally honest dissection of how the middling minions of the ruling class, unelected bureaucrats, corrupt journalists, and unhinged academics, and have seized power to slowly strangle our republic in the name of democracy. So, it's your turn now, Oren. Tell us what do you mean by total state?
Well, more people are now familiar with the term deep state,
yes,
which is a good starting point, right? It's the idea that the unelected bureaucracy in Washington wields far more power than many of the elected officials, including even up to the president of the United States in certain situations. But I want to expand that notion because I want people to understand that in our system, it's not just the government, though that is important, that unelected bureaucracy is critical, a critical part of the total state, but expands to academia, it expands to media, it expands to corporations, it expands to banking. Every one of these institutions has been penetrated by this ruling ideology of progressive secular humanism, or what a lot of people call wokeness. And this pseudo-religion has come to dominate the understanding of every one of these institutions. So our state is total in the sense that every institution from top to bottom, be it government or private sector, is now parroting the same religious belief system, and that system is antithetical to our well-being.
That's exactly what happened to the French Revolution. That's what I'm thinking. I'm looking back at the French Revolution, and that was all about democracy, too. It was about elevating democracy, the rule of the people, and they were stirred up like a mob. And ultimately, the heads began to roll, but not enough heads began to roll because those that were guiding and leading it said, no, we got to go further. We got to go further. We got to get rid of all authority. We got to get rid of even biblical authority. We got to change the dates, the weeks, the days of the week, and so on. We got to get rid of all authority, whether it's political, whether it's religious. And ultimately, Robespierre, who was declared Messiah next day, lost his own head to the mob. Such is democracy without God.
Well, and the French Revolution is an excellent example because, you know, the first thing or one of the things they did was elevate the goddess of reason in Notre Dame Cathedral. Right?
Exactly.
It is that total replacement of the understanding of God's order with a different order that is necessary when you have this type of complete cultural revolution. And we had fewer heads roll in the United States, which is why I think ultimately our revolution that has happened here in the last 100 or so years has been more enduring than the French Revolution.
Exactly.
Because it happened slowly and with less blood, but ultimately with the same process of that complete, total remaking of the state and the social order.
Isn't that the reason why that French secular philosopher Alexis de Tocqueville came over here in 1830? Because he saw the radical difference that America was taking as opposed to what happened with France. They couldn't even establish a stable government in France for years and years and years. So he came over here to try to discover what it was that made America great. And he spent 9 months here that gave birth to a book called Democracy in America. But what he wasn't promoting democracy per se. He was analyzing the kind of democracy that we had, which was a representative republic. And he said, it wasn't until I went into the churches of America that I discovered what the foundation of her enduring government really was, what it was. He says it was the fire that was coming from America's pulpits to preach righteousness among the people. It wasn't just pure democracy. It was something much deeper in the hearts of the people.
And de Tocqueville said that ultimately what really allowed this form of government was the fact that Americans were willing to enter these voluntary associations. They lived vigorous civic lives that mm-hmm. were religious, but also were heavily communal, and they were willing to fill in the social needs to make sure that the state did not have to do this. And this is something I point out in the book, is that in many ways we have handed these powers over. We've decided we don't need to educate our children. We don't need to care for our poor. We don't need to take care of our elderly. We don't need to do these things. We can hand these things over to the state. And that makes us feel like we have more freedom because these burdens of right. social demand and religious demand are no longer on us. But ultimately the state comes back and demands more of us because dependency is actually the basis of sovereignty. And so if we are dependent on a state, the state will have the sovereignty over us. If we are in a community where we fill each other's needs and we care for each other, then that sovereignty can be located closer to the actual people. And that's what de Tocqueville saw
exactly.
in America.
Indeed, he did. And it was because of the nation, this founding of the nation rooted deeply in the biblical foundation, it was out of that the spirit of community, of loving one another, caring for one another, just as the message of the gospel repeats 50 times in the New Testament, that's what they did. But then gradually, as we've abandoned the authority of the Bible and put it in a museum in Washington, D.C. now, it seems that we've abandoned the idea of caring with the people, and we have become totally independent from one another, and therefore we relegate power increasingly to what you call the deep state, or total state.
Yes. Yes, and I do believe that while this is, this is a spiritual problem, this has also become a problem of scale. Part of the argument I make in the book is that the growth of society and the radical changes that happened, especially after the Industrial Revolution,
right.
drove us to this point where we are no longer connected to each other in community, and we are encouraged by not just our government, our secular government, but also our economic system and corporations that drive us towards this idea of atomization, stripping away our identity as Christians, stripping away our identity in the different ways of being that we had, the traditions, the values that we had previously, so that we can be better consumers, better producers, people who will not upset the system and allow for the continued growth of the managerial state, as I point out in the book. And so I think that it's important to recognize that this has happened on a spiritual level, but it's also happened in a material level. We are drawn by the incentives of our ever-increasing, almost global empire at this point that has really driven us towards this idea of the singular man who completely is isolated and depends only on the government, never on church, never on family, never on community, never on faith.
Well, you sever your dependence upon God, and you will necessarily place your dependence upon government. And bigger government it will become until it rules tyrannically. That's the spirit of your book as I see it. Friends, you really want to get a copy of this book. It's going to be so, so helpful to you. Total State, $26. We'll put it in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org. Get a copy. Read it. We'll be back.
There is so much more about Chuck Chrismeyer and Save America Ministries. on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint, friends. Our viewpoint concerning the issue of the nature of our government is determining destiny. We have an identity crisis. We really do. That's what our guest today, Arone, is telling us. Arone McIntyre is telling us we have an identity crisis. We think we have decided, somehow been told, that we have a pure democracy, when in fact we don't and never did. So he's saying, as we have changed our viewpoint concerning this, we have necessarily shifted our trust from God to government, and government then takes over, and we idolatrously then increasingly put our trust in the government to take care of us from cradle to grave, and it becomes a total state. Total state. So what happens in a total state, Arone?
Well, we end up in the scenario where the state feels the need to penetrate every social sphere with the political. You think about an NFL game. People can't watch football anymore without hearing two national anthems because it's important to interject this new idea of what America should be. You can't watch any form of television or a movie or read a comic book or play a video game or any of these things without having political messaging. Every interaction with a major institution is actually an opportunity for the government to further its propaganda, and every one of these corporations knows this, which is why they feel the need to conform and impel this message into every aspect of our society. This comes to dominate even our churches, which only really become platforms for the new religion, the new doctrine, the social gospel of the total state. And that's what ultimately the danger is that nothing is sacred. No sphere is separate. Everything is political because the state feels the need and the right to interject into every social interaction.
Yeah, you say maintaining power in a democratic system means maintaining control over how the populace perceives and understands the world around them. Power hinges increasingly on the ability to manipulate the masses. So with the collapse of religious, aristocratic, and tribal power, oligarchy becomes the only force capable of simultaneously influencing mass media, mass education, and mass bureaucracy, which are the key levers of power for influencing mass democracy. So all three branches of the government quickly fall under the influence of oligarchical domination. So what is an oligarchy?
Well, an oligarchy is just the rule of a few. In the classical sense, this is how Aristotle described it. In the common parlance, it tends to be ruled by the money, the moneyed powers, right? Mm-hmm. And we see this very much in their situation. Even those who might support, say, President Trump, obviously this man is a billionaire, right? And who is he saying he's going to put in charge of the government should he be elected? Elon Musk, another billionaire. Now, these are oligarchs that I agree with more than our current ruling oligarchs.
Right.
But ultimately, we see this truth that the form of government has really shifted. Even people who have been inside the presidential administration and held formal powers inside the government apparatus immediately leave and start media institutions because they understand that that is actually where the power lies. And so even though we have a constitution that lays out where power is supposed to be located, ultimately we start to recognize that the people who are inside the government realize that they're not even operating the government when they are formally elected. The real power lies in the money, in the communications, in the media, in the education.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because if you look at how much money has been raised in the current presidential election, you find that by far the majority of the money has gone to the Democrat Party. By far. At least double has gone to the Democrat Party. Where's it coming from? Well, it appears, for instance, that Hollywood is part of the oligarchy ruling the country then in the name of democracy.
Absolutely. Hollywood is one of the primary messaging venues for the total state. And we see this not just inside the United States, but outside. The most famous American export is really its entertainment industry and its influence there. This is what has allowed, and I point out in the book, that we have the total state inevitably expands into a global infrastructure. It has to, due to the way that it is structured and the way that it accumulates power. And so the Hollywood and the stories that they tell are the things that shape public opinion. They shape the basis for understanding, especially as we are isolated more and more from normal human interaction. People who grew up in a time where COVID dominates are going to have fewer and fewer friends. They're going to experience life through a screen increasingly. And that means that what comes through the screen, the Hollywood, these kind of messages, they're going to define their reality in a way that they simply didn't in previous generations.
Shifting just a bit, a fellow by the name of John Kerry is, for all practical purposes, one of these. He's a political oligarch with vast amounts of money at his disposal because of his wife. And he came out and said, just before the inauguration of Joe Biden, he said that the inauguration of Joe Biden would catapult the world and the nation, America, into the Great Reset and the One World Order. It seems to me that that goes along exactly with the trajectory of what you're saying. This total state doesn't stop in America. It's everywhere. It becomes the entire world governing system.
And it gets even worse. John Kerry was just at a WEF meeting, a World Economic Forum meeting, which is kind of ground zero for the globalism movement. And he was lamenting that the First Amendment was blocking the ability of the American government to curtail free speech in the way that other Western nations are doing. So, for instance, in the United Kingdom, Keir Starmer and the Labour government have wildly cracked down on speech inside that country. They are literally arresting people for retweeting posts that disagree with the government's immigration policy. And John Kerry would like to see that same approach done here. In fact, Kamala Harris has now imported over 100 Labour Party operatives, foreign influence operatives, into the United States for the purpose of campaigning in North Carolina and Pennsylvania. And she has one of Keir Starmer's closest advisors advising her campaign and operating a foreign non-government organization inside the United States for the purpose of canceling conservative platforms, conservative new platforms, and getting rid of Elon Musk's Twitter. So we see that there's actually direct collusion between multiple entities across different governments with the express purpose of cracking down on free speech and controlling the narrative, not just in the United States, but in multiple different Western nations.
We used to sing a song in many of our churches, maybe some still do, toward the end of a service or maybe after Eucharist or communion, we'd sing a song, "Blessed be the tie that binds our hearts in Christian love." That tie has largely been severed in America. That's what you're telling us. That's what, in effect, we have lost the tie that binds, and now the tie that's binding us is pure democracy that is leading inevitably to tyranny because we have abandoned the foundations of freedom by abandoning the foundations of Christian faith. Do you agree with that statement?
Absolutely. The United States came together from several different European nations. It was primarily Anglo, but then several other peoples, came into the United States. But the thing that always bound it together, the thing that gave it its shared culture and national identity, even though it was a mixture of other nations, was a background Anglo-Protestant understanding of Christianity. It was understood other groups could join, other groups could assimilate, but this Christian basis is ultimately what tied the United States together. And once that is gone, once that assumption of values and culture and religion is gone, then there is only the mass mob. There is only the will of the people guided entirely by the manipulation of the elites that actually drives things. If you don't have that tie, if you don't have that binding idea of what we believe as Christians, then ultimately there is no limit on what the state can do.
At the Declaration of Independence signing in 1776, Sam Adams, who was deemed to be the voice of the American Revolution, said this: "We have this day restored the sovereign to whom all men ought to be obedient. He reigns in heaven, and from the rising to the setting of the sun, let his kingdom come." He went on to say, "A general dissolution of principles and manners will more surely overthrow the liberties of America than the whole force of the common enemy. Neither the wisest constitution nor the wisest laws will secure the liberty and happiness of a people whose manners become universally corrupt. He, therefore, is the truest friend to the liberty of his country, who tries to promote its virtue, and who, so far as his power and influence extend, will not allow a man to be chosen into any office of power or trust who is not a wise and virtuous person. If we would most truly enjoy this gift of heaven," he said, "let us become a virtuous people." He was referring to one of the statements made by the Apostle Peter, who said we must add to our faith virtue. Virtue. And without the Christian foundation, we have abandoned virtue, so much so that in 1992, I think it was, Forbes magazine, the foremost business magazine in America at that time, devoted its entire 75th anniversary edition to asking the question, "Whatever happened to virtue in America?" Could you believe that? A half an inch thick, "Whatever happened to virtue in America?" That now is the foundation for the tyranny that is coming in the name of democracy.
You know, most people think of Machiavelli as a fan of monarchy because of his book, The Prince. But in reality, he was actually an advocate for republican government. He thought that was actually the best form of government. And Machiavelli said that the thing that enables a republic is its citizens' virtue. The thing that allows it to move from monarchy to the rule of the people to a republic is the virtue of the people. Without that virtue and their individual goodness, then the state cannot stand and they must go back to the rule of a monarch. And we are very much recognizing this.
There it is.
Public on virtue.
Exactly. We'll be right back after this, friends. Stay tuned.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
I must highly recommend Aron McIntyre's book, Total State: How Liberal Democracies Become Tyrannies. It's a $33 hardbound book, yours for $26 on our website, saveus.org. saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255, writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Now, the question that we have then around, we've established the situation. We have basically proven the situation, and the reality is that virtually all of the so-called democracies in the world are collapsing. Almost all of them. In one way or the other, they're collapsing. And they're crying out increasingly and yielding increasingly to tyranny, to global government, to a cry for somebody to come in to deliver us because we can't handle this anymore. So where's the hope? Is there any hope?
I think the hope is in the fact that the current system, as you point out, is unsustainable. And that is scary because it's what we've become comfortable with. It's because it's what we're used to. But as we've both pointed out, this system is ultimately not good for people. It leaves people isolated, alone, dejected, immoral, unconnected to community, and most importantly, in rejection of God's word and mm-hmm. the religious community that will uplive their lives. And so I think what this is ultimately is an opportunity to return back to a healthier understanding of human organization. It does mean we're going to have to make sacrifices. We should recognize that while the system as it is now has many drawbacks, it does bring many creature comforts. A lot of people aren't prepared to go back to a system where they have to work hard. They have to be connected to their community. They have to take care of people. They have to sacrifice. And so I think what the hope comes from is communities that are willing to step up and retake that responsibility that has been handed over to the total state and reconnect to the things that make us good human beings.
All right. Now, that is a what I would call a generic non-Christian secular response. I'm not accusing you of being non-Christian. I'm just saying that is the kind of response. So going a little further, I remember back when the Christian Coalition was formed by Pat Robertson, and it was led by a guy who was very political, and ultimately he left, went to Texas, and formed his own political organization, and the leadership of the Christian Coalition was changed or shifted to two gentlemen, I believe, who were congressmen, Don Hodel and Randy Tate. And they made a statement that I think is very poignant right here for this moment. They said, if we were to fill every elective office in the United States of America with professing Christians of the ilk that we currently have, America would still not change. They said America will only change when the hearts of we the people change. Isn't that really where the problem is? It's a heart problem. And how in the world are we going to say, well, yeah, we made a mistake here. We overemphasize democracy, and we're leading to tyranny. So all of a sudden, we are going to change that, but we're not going to change our hearts and dependency upon God rather than government. How does that work?
Well, I would say this. I think that a lot of people will say revival or bust, right? That's kind of what you're expressing here.
That's true.
You can only fix the system, individual people do that. And ultimately, that is entirely, has a lot of truth to it. But that is also, as you know well, out of our control, right?
That's true. Absolutely out of our control. Only God can bring that by his spirit.
Precisely. So we can pray for that, and we can hope for that, and we can do our part in sharing God's word and working our own lives to bring that about. But ultimately, that is in the hand of God. So the question then becomes, well, then how shall we live, right? Like, what will we do our ability?
In the meantime, precisely.
And my argument is this, that the scale of the civilization actually does matter. There is a systemic problem with the way we have organized our society and the way we have placed our trust in bureaucracies that are impersonal and organizations that are scaled far beyond our ability to actually hold them accountable.
True.
And again, our founders knew this. That's why they used a federal system, right? Because they believed in subsidiarity, that problems were best solved closest to the actual problem, Christian or not.
Right.
That is a truth.
And that's why Donald Trump decided, okay, we have eliminated Roe versus Wade as a federal overview of the law. But now that's going to shift to the states to make the determination among the we the people of those states.
Yes, and what many Christians were shocked to find is actually that the, you know, the values had shifted over time. And that many of these states actually were not finding or passing laws that they'd expected to come when Roe versus Wade is gone. And that's where
correct.
The heart issue comes in, right? That's where
right.
you have to start caring about your community again. But you can only do that once someone like Donald Trump and the Supreme Court bring that issue back to the state. So it's a twofold problem, right?
Exactly.
You have a systemic problem, and then you have a heart problem. And you have to solve both.
All right. So how do you solve the system problem? Because that's really what you're talking about here.
Right, and that is the part we can address, and I think ultimately the answer is scaling things down. We have to return to a radical federalism, and this means dismantling a large number of national or international institutions that have been given the power over, the United States.
So how do you do that? How do you do that when the weight of the direction is all like a tsunami in favor of total state?
Well, scale has won the battle for the last couple hundred years. And again, there's no denying that. We should understand the mountain that you are climbing when you try to face this issue. But we also see this system falling apart, right? We know that people are less competent, that our logistical supply lines are coming apart, that our ability to protect our own borders and all of these things are failing. And you start to recognize that actually much of this would be done better if we could scale it back and do it closer to home, if we could stop handing all of these different powers over to these massive institutions that are losing their ability to perform their job, and instead more competent governance was done closer to the people. And I think we're seeing that in places like my home state in Florida, where Governor DeSantis has refused many of the dictates of the federal government and said, no, we're doing what's good for
He's a profoundly excellent governor, no question.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And so that lesser magistrate can protect you from the greater magistrate.
That's true. So this is an uphill battle, and they say that all politics is local, but you'd never know that when you listen to the politicians, because they want it all to come down from the top. In other words, tyrannically.
Yeah, absolutely. It is all moving the buck up and out. Even the national politicians are moving the actual process again into those bureaucracies and into those unaccountable places inside the government. And so, increasingly, the impetus is to push all authority and all culpability, up the chain and not have anything focused here. But that's got to change. We have to have Republican governors who are willing to take initiative. We have to have local leaders who are willing to take initiative and say, no, we are going to provide for our people. We are going to better their lives. We are not going to pass the buck up the chain and say, oh, we'll just wait for the next election somewhere. We are going to make a change in our community now for the betterment of people.
So we the people must step up and realize our own weakness, that unless we're submitted to God and his authority as our creator and what he has to say about our lives, we're going to continue to do it our ways. So there is a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof, not so pretty.
Yeah, ultimately, this country was founded by people who said, I need to live in accordance with the way that God has demanded of me. And so I need to go to a place where I can govern myself, where my community can govern itself, and it can follow God, and it can follow his word, and it can organize in a righteous way.
We used to call that the fear of the Lord.
Yeah.
We used to call that the fear of the Lord, and that's been abandoned for the past 30, 40 years.
Yep, and we have to recognize that a return to that is ultimately the only way you can build the virtue in communities necessary to remove power from the total state and bring it back into those more local communities that we're talking about.
Well, maybe we should hear again from John Adams. Here's what he wrote in 1776. Statesmen, my dear sir, may plan and speculate for liberty, but it is religion, what he was talking about, Christianity and morality alone, which can establish the principles upon which freedom can securely stand. The only foundation of a free constitution is pure virtue. And if this cannot be inspired into our people in a greater measure than they have it now, they may have changed their rulers and the forms of government, but they will not obtain a lasting liberty. I don't know much how clear it can be stated, but I think that says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, ultimately, you know, Joseph de Maistre said that everyone gets the government they deserve. You know, and as terrible as that is, it's also true, and that's why we're in the position that we're in. As you just pointed out there, without virtue, you will end up with the state, with the government you deserve, and with virtue, you will end up with the government you deserve. So, if you want to change the government, ultimately, you need to increase the virtue of the people.
So what do you say to pastors then as a final word, Oren?
I would say that a focus, again, on community and caring for the community is key. Not just sending money off to a missionary somewhere, though by all means do that, but recognize that if the state is doing the caring for your community and you are not, then you are failing as a church and you are not building the virtue and the leadership necessary. Give young men opportunities to lead. Give young people opportunities to serve their community. Give everyone the opportunity to share in each other's burdens and make sure that there's no shame in that.
So instead of pouring $100 million into a church building, you might want to diversify that into truly caring for the people.
Absolutely.
Mm-mm-mm. Oren, thank you so much for joining us. We've had a very open and frank conversation here. I really appreciate it. And, you know, the hope is, and I've been on the air now for 29 and a half years, the Lord spoke to my heart back in 1992 at the height of my legal career, saying, son, you've been pleading the cause of men long enough. I want you to plead my cause in the land as a voice to the church, declaring vision for the nation, America's greatest crisis hour. And that's what we've been doing here. And, you know, it's an uphill battle. I'm thinking about why my shoulders are hurting this morning. I think it's because I'm paddling a canoe straight up Niagara Falls. What say you?
It is, like you said, certainly quite a bit of work ahead of us, no doubt about that.
Well, it is. Again, thank you so very much. And friends, get a copy of the book, Total State, How Liberal Democracies Become Tyrannies. It's a hard thing to swallow that so-called democracy can become the most tyrannical form of government. But if... think about it this way. If the majority of the people have rejected God's authority in their life, what are they left to? Man's authority. And if human beings, while made in the image of God, have rejected the image of God, then where are they going to go? They're going to adopt a godless way. Now imagine the majority of the people in our country and across the world establishing that very idea. Can you imagine what's going to happen? I'll tell you what's going to happen. The Bible tells us it's going to be the rebuilding politically and spiritually and economically of the ancient Tower of Babel. A new global government with a tyrannical ruler, not Robespierre this time, as in the French Revolution, but what we call the Antichrist. Just think about it. Now's the opportunity for change. But then, that's what's pretending. So let's prepare the way in our own hearts and lives. Let's take seriously the discussion here today on Viewpoint. Become a partner. Send your gifts by friends to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Write a check. Thanks for joining us. Become that partner, Lord. And, let's submit to the authority of God and His Word.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.